everyone, welcome back to the Be More podcast, where we inspire you to be a little bit more of every role within the Salesforce ecosystem and beyond. For today's episode, we are diving into what it takes to be more CTO. And I'm joined today by Keir. So Keir, are you able to introduce yourself for me, please?
Certainly. I'm Keir Bowden. I, up until a week ago, was the CTO of RightGen, but you might have seen that all of us in the Credera family have become one company. So I think my current role is kind of CTO of the Salesforce practice in the UK. But I think most of this I'll be talking about the role at RightGen, because it's obviously only been a few days, so I don't really know too much about that role at the moment. There's not really too much I can say about it. I've been in the Salesforce ecosystem since 2008. So 15 and a bit years coming on for, originally starting off as a service management consultant at RightGen. And I've done quite a lot in the Salesforce ecosystem in that time as well. I've been an MVP since, I think, 2011, MVP Hall of Fame since 2022, probably. Spoken at a lot of conferences and co-run the London Salesforce Developers.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it's great to have you here. And I certainly know of you from the Salesforce ecosystem in the past. I think the first time I met you, 2018, possibly, nonprofit user group. So you're definitely active in the ecosystem and looking forward to this chat today.
Cool. Yeah, same here. Great to be here.
Yeah, awesome. So kind of break it down for us. What does the role of a CTO actually entail? Like, what's your typical day-to-day, do you think?
So I think what's interesting about this, I think if you talk to five different CTOs from five different companies, they'll have a different view on what the job actually is. Sometimes it's a very sales and commercial focused role, which wasn't the case for me. Mine was far more a technical role. So I kind of used to call myself the chief technical officer as much as the chief technology officer. And a lot of that was because I had good hooks into Salesforce product teams through the MVP program and other just historical relationships. And I come from an enterprise development background. So my role, a lot of that was to be almost, I used to, again, refer to myself as the lender of last resort. So when somebody had a problem or a customer had a problem, it would eventually end up with me. That was the kind of pinnacle of where it got to. And then it became my problem and I had no one else to hand it off to. And also within RightGen, because we were very big on building applications as well, not App Exchange offerings, but more accelerators from the SI perspective. So I headed up the IP development as well. So for best part of 7 or 8 years, that was leading the Bright Media development, our media accelerator for digital and print publishers. So I would say it was very hands-on for quite a number of years and very technical. Then after about 8 years or so doing that, things then flipped around and I assumed a bit more of a traditional CTO role that I took responsibility for all the systems. I also took on responsibility for the graduate program, our relaunched graduate program after the COVID pandemic finished. We kickstarted that and generally kind of having a lot of the techies report into me at that point in time. And probably more interest in terms of Salesforce relationship from a selling perspective then as well. Then in 2021, we got acquired and I moved into a very traditional CTO type of role then, because I was leading the migration of the technology infrastructure, moving us off of our previous tools and systems onto Omnicom systems. So that was kind of, you know, back to the days of network diagrams and configuring switches and DNS records and things like that. So I'd say at the moment I'm leading on the AI side of things for RightGen. So I'm spending time playing around with Prompt Builder and Copilot, talking to customers about that. Talking at events, and also because of the way we're merging in with the rest of Credera, I'm also spreading the word about Salesforce to our Credera colleagues here, both here and across the pond.
Right, awesome. Well, it sounds like you've got a fair amount of stuff on your plate there.
Indeed.
you definitely must keep yourself busy and out of trouble. And I think it's great that you kind of get to play with some of the new technologies as well, like the Prompt Builder. So that's good to hear. Kind of spinning kind of what you said almost back on you a little bit, but you lent on potentially at some point, not sure if you're kind of playing this role right now, but being a technical escalation point And ultimately, yep. if there's a problem, people come to you and you try to help them. What do you think are good qualities to have in somebody that's playing that role? Because I think for me, sometimes I'm that on my projects, like as a solution architect. And I guess there are a number of different people that kind of play that role in the ecosystem. What do you think are like qualities of somebody that is that kind of escalation point?
I think it's you need to be a good communicator because you need to know the right questions to ask to get to the bottom of what is actually happening. Generally speaking, people won't come to you with necessarily a clear description of what problem they're trying to solve. It'll just be, you know, what's actually going wrong at this point in time. And often it's quite handy just to take a step back and say, well, what are we actually trying to achieve here? Just to make sure that we're going about it the right way. Sometimes I think it also helps if you've your finger on the pulse of what is going on in that particular space with Salesforce, because there are known issues. It may well be an existing problem that you've heard about before. And I think the other thing is that sometimes it'll be a technical problem where, you know, maybe there is an issue. It's being able to think of a workaround. Okay, this is causing us a problem. Maybe we don't have time to fix what it is. Maybe that's a bigger change. So what can we do to work around it? So I think being pragmatic is a really key skill for this, because I think it's really important that, you know, it's done is better than perfect, I would say, if you're in that kind of situation. But a lot of the time, for me, it'll be escalating to Salesforce as well. You know, I'll be looking at it, checking it out, trying things and saying, yeah, you're absolutely right, that doesn't work. Sometimes I'll be fixing things, but sometimes I'll be escalating.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. And it's no surprise to me that communication skills there are really important, because ultimately you kind of got to play a little bit of a active listener, but also effectively communicate with people as well, whether they're colleagues, people at Salesforce, clients, other partners. You know, that part of it, I think, is really important. And I guess those skills help you within your CTO role as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, communication is absolutely key. I think it's important to be able to communicate really at all levels. You need to be able to communicate at the coalface, understand what's happening, explain what's happening. And then you may need to, you know, explain the issue that you've just seen with someone who's in VS Code, showing you their code. You may need to go and explain that to a CIO, what that means in terms of their business. So they're not interested in the fact that maybe we've got an Apex trigger where we've got a problem with that and it's throwing a null pointer exception. That means nothing to them. They need to understand the impact on their business, whether that's something they can live with, or is the workaround, you know, what do we do at that point in time? And I think if you're, certainly when you're communicating problems, it's almost always much better to go in and communicate a problem and some potential solutions. If you just go in and say, look, it's broken, what do? We all just stand here and look at each other. It should really be, you know, this has happened, but here's some potential solutions. What I'm here to talk to you about is, let's decide on which one we want to do. We don't want to go to a, you know, customer and make them the owner of the problem. We want to bring them a solution.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a great way to soften the impact of a problem as well, because you kind of come not only with the problem, but with a potential workaround or solution as well, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you need to be honest. You need to say if there is a problem and why that has occurred. It's always good to get that kind of information out as quickly as possible. But then, yes, very much jump into what the potential solutions are. And also, you've got to be able to compare and contrast those solutions. You've got to be able to explain, again, in somebody else's terms, potentially, what the impact of picking one over the other, what the pros and cons are. And I think, again, I think that's really important to be able to do that and make sure that when you're asking someone to take a decision, you've given them all the information that they can possibly need in order to take that decision.
Yeah, perfect. And I think kind of leaning on to like the Salesforce flavor of it as well, hopefully you agree with this, but there isn't necessarily a clear cut right or wrong way either. There's like pros and cons of doing things. And you kind of almost have to work with, if it's a client, with the client and try to help them make an informed decision. Do you think that's kind of part of it too?
Yeah, I do. I think especially in the consulting space as well, you're often in a situation where there is an existing system that's been built there. And if it's a mature ore, that may have been built 10, 12 years ago, and it may have been built by a company that no longer exists.
Yeah.
And you know, it will reflect the technology in, present in Salesforce at that time. So you have to work within those constraints and within those boundaries. It's no good going in and saying, we'll just throw everything away, pay us £5 million and we'll rebuild it all and hopefully we won't break it all. You need to be coming in with a solution that's going to work with that particular technology. And that might be going into something like Visualforce, I guess. Something along those lines, which is, you know, that's the nature of consulting, is sometimes you're going with some of the older technology, but it's in place, it's working, and there are just some changes needed to that rather than a wholesale rebuild. So I think that's important as well in kind of not getting too carried away with everything must be built using the latest technology. Sometimes you have to work with what's there.
Yeah, totally get that. And ultimately, you kind of have to work with what you're given. If it's a Visualforce site and it's using like a site.com rather than an experienced cloud, that's kind of definitely old school now, so to speak. So yeah, I guess you kind of work within those constraints. So moving on a little bit, and we've touched on this partially already, but in your role as CTO, how do you interact with other roles, and what other type of roles do you kind of typically engage with?
That's an interesting question. So I'll typically engage with the rest of the C-suite because it is a leadership role. So there is the kind of running of the business aspect of it, as well as the technology side of things. Definitely interacting with everyone in the technology side of things. Because again, I'll often be running training. I'll be trying to find out what additional information people need, spreading news that I've heard from Salesforce, etc.
Yeah.
And then I guess there's also interacting with roles outside of my particular company. So that'll often be Salesforce system owners of Salesforce systems within companies. Again, often at the kind of C-level leadership type of level, and also a lot of interaction with Salesforce from the product side, the product managers and the like, but also on the sales side. So the sales engineers. The sales engineering team, I'll often be spending time with, sometimes to be enabled by them, sometimes to tell them about the great things that we're doing with their technology. So yeah. It's a real mixed bag of roles that I interact with. Probably sometimes administration, probably less of that in recent years, just because it's got so big that we've got people who are more expert on the admin side of Salesforce than I am these days. I'm not as hands-on. I'm still hands-on on the development side, but not so much on the admin side.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that's great to kind of almost know who in the team you can call on, right? If you do need to kind of dive into something in particular, I think it's great to have those relationships with other people and kind of know where to go.
Absolutely. And I think the relationships with product managers at Salesforce and the like are very useful as well, because it's just knowing the right person to talk to. Just to sometimes just get a quick answer that, that doesn't work. That's a lot of the time, that's all I need.
Yeah.
I know something and I can move on to something else. Is it me or is it something else? And then, or if it is me, then again, that gives me a steer that I will get there. I just need to look a bit harder.
Definitely get that as well. So that's great to hear. What about kind of in terms of commitment to this role? There are other roles that perhaps fit this question better, in terms of sometimes if you're a consultant in a smaller consultancy, you might be playing the role of an admin, maybe the role of a developer as well, kind of for part of the time. In your role, you're obviously playing that role all the time in your working day. I guess kind of how it varies for you, maybe you're just wearing lots of different hats, right? Do you think that's a fair summary?
I can talk a bit about what it was like when I first. So we're Brightgen, by the time we were acquired, was a very different company to the one that I became CTO of back in, I think it was towards the end of 2011. We were probably about 12 or 15 people back then, so it was quite a small company. So I was doing pre-sales, I was doing administration, I was resetting people's passwords, I was doing development, I was doing designs, I was doing architecture. I was really doing it all. You know, we would travel all over the country doing whatever we needed to do. And we didn't have the luxury of a large pre-sales team or the like. So if there was a pitch needed, that would often be me and one of the founders would go somewhere and do a bits and pieces. And often while I was pitching, they'd say, okay, well, we've got you here. Can you just take a look at this report? Or can you just help us with the sharing problem, something like that? So I got very good at, or very experienced at kind of being able to pivot very quickly. So I think it was very much a case of wearing lots and lots of hats. And I think that probably changed as we grew larger and larger. And we started to get things like dedicated pre-sales teams. We started to organize a little more around functional consultants versus the more pro-code consultants. And the need for me to be as hands-on and to be as involved in those things became less and less. And while I still used to go along to pitches from time to time, I would generally speak, or you know, project kickoffs, for example, I used to go along. Typically by the end, I was going along to the initial kickoff, and then that was me done. I wasn't sticking around for them 5 days workshops like I used to do back in the day. So I think it's one of those things where it just grew organically, really, as the company grew and as the size of projects that we were undertaking grew, that I started wearing less and less hats. So I still, as I say, I still do go on the tools from time to time on the developer side of things.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. I think that's a great answer. Moving on a little bit, but if there was somebody listening to this or watching this and they were thinking about pursuing a CTO type career path, or perhaps they're already on their way to become a CTO, what tips, advice would you give to them?
I think it's important to get a deep understanding of the technology. I think that it's quite hard to be a CTO if you haven't got that level. It doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be a pro coder. You don't necessarily need to come from a development background, but I think being able to handle technical architecture as well as other types of architecture, I think, is really important. And I also think I keep going back to it, but communication is a huge part of this job. It's amazing that a job with like technical and technology, and it involves so much talking to people, I always say. The amount of meetings I've sat in over the last 5 years or so is quite remarkable. Sometimes it involves drawing on boards, but a lot of the time it is just talking and explaining. So I think it's those two things: get a deep technical understanding, go deep and wide before you start lifting yourself up from that, and becoming a little bit more hands off. And also, get good at the communication side of things.
Okay. I think that's great. And thinking about your own journey now, and appreciate, as you've said already, it's kind of evolved a little bit over time. And maybe it's evolved a little bit as Salesforce has evolved as well, because obviously things are always changing. There's always new things and things being retired. So along that journey, you probably learn a few life lessons. Would you, if you were to do everything again from the beginning, what would you change or do differently?
That's a really good question, and it's something I think about from time to time. And I can't really, in all honesty, think of anything that I'd do particularly differently. Everything did kind of happen organically. It's not like I set out targeting this particular role. I was, you know, I was working as a principal consultant at the time when we had a bit of a reorganization and created a couple of additional C-level roles, CTO and chief architect. And then since then, I'm sure I've made mistakes along the way. I've kind of learned as I've gone along. Haven't had an awful lot in the way of formal training, but I can't think of anything where I wouldn't do that. Where I think, oh yeah, that was a really. I think every mistake I've made, I've learned from. So I don't think that I can't really think of anything obvious that I would change. In all honesty, I really can't. Yeah, I think moving into Salesforce was a great career move for me, even back then. And I think that's just proven over the years to be more and more a good decision. As I say, everything else has kind of happened really than more so than targeting it. So, yeah, I wouldn't change anything.
From my own experience, I can relate to that as well. If I hadn't have made mistakes, then I wouldn't have learned to not make the same mistake again, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, and I think if you spend all your time trying to avoid making mistakes, you become very fearful of making mistakes. You can kind of get into a situation where you don't really want to do anything because it might go wrong. Whereas I think it's much better to be a bit more focused on action, to be a bit more focused on trying things out, getting them done. Some things you need to think about a bit more. You need to put a bit more prep time in, but it is really easy to get kind of stuck in analysis paralysis. scared to make the first move in case that goes wrong, you know, and what's the worst that can happen? That's always the thing to remember. I'd much rather be justifying why the approach I took didn't work than the fact that I couldn't decide on an approach to make. I was stuck and caught and I couldn't make that decision. I think that's a much easier conversation to have.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And kind of thinking a little bit on like what's the worst that can happen. The majority of things that you do can be backed out, can be fixed, you know, even if, and I don't know whether I should be saying this, but I'm going to say this, even if you enable person accounts, you can hide them, right? You don't have to use them, you know, one of those irreversible things that Salesforce gives you when you turn it on. So there is usually a way around the problem, right?
Yeah, and I think a personal account is actually a great example because I've written loads of papers in the past explaining the various options around trying to model something like a personal account. And that is a great example of where the decision takes far too long because there is, you know, some Salesforce help that says, you know, don't use personal accounts unless you're really sure you need them. And that then becomes this, oh, I can't do it. Another good example of that was my domain, when my domain couldn't be changed. Everybody suddenly went away from, we'll just use our company name as my domain, but it might be wrong. We might want to change it. It's like, but it is our company name, or it is the company name. So why wouldn't you use that? What could be better? But it was just because it was irreversible, everybody suddenly became very fearful of making the decision.
Mm, yeah, definitely. And I think there are other things like multi-currency. And at one point, Experience Cloud domain was separate from the My domain. And now that they're kind of married to each other now. I remember, that umming and ahhing of, oh, should we call it this? Should we call it that? You know, what if we want to change it? So,
oh yeah, I mean, we spent about a year debating that, and we ended up calling it BrightGen. Surprisingly, So,
you know, a year later, you can kind of circle,
absolutely,
somehow circle all the way back. Yeah, I can relate to that as well. Kind of appreciate we touched on this a little bit already, but what do you think are the key skills attributes to be a CTO? We've already touched on like communication skills and technical understanding. Do you think there's anything else that comes to mind?
Well, I think part of communication is being a good listener. Once you get to a senior role in technology, it's very easy to fall for the old not invented here type of syndrome, you know, and take the view that's not how I would have done it, therefore it's wrong and I don't need to hear anymore. It's just, a lot of people fall into that habit of, this is a problem. I've thought of a way we can solve it. You haven't solved it that way, therefore it's wrong. And you need to be much better at, I think one of the key skills is to be listening to someone's solution, understanding the solution, critiquing the solution, because it might be better. It might be as good as you mentioned earlier. There's loads of ways, you know, there's often multiple ways to do things in Salesforce. One isn't necessarily better than the other. I think it's important to listen to people. And to understand what they're proposing. I think it's also important to, from a kind of managing point of view, I've always felt it's important to give people some freedom, give people some agency. So don't, micromanage them. Don't tell them exactly how to do something. Simply give them the problem. Maybe give them a couple of pointers. Feels like this might be a good case for Lightning Web Components, but, you know, you have a look, etc. I think that then leaves people with the creativity that they desire in their role rather than being built this way, press these keys almost, because that's what I say is the right way. I think it's much better to leave people to it. But when you're doing that, I think it's also important to have regular check-ins so that, you know, you can have the solution explained, because it might be there actually is a reason why one approach isn't, or a particular approach isn't going to work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's good to get sight of that early rather than letting someone get too far down the build before pointing out, oh yeah, I knew that. If you'd have asked me, I could have told it wouldn't work. So we don't want that either. So those are the kind of the key things, really, I think. And a lot of it is, a lot of it, once you, again, a job role with technical technology in the title, a lot of it is around the softer skills, actually, than necessarily being a technical expert. I think that's kind of almost table stakes. You need to have that, and it's all the other skills or the other softer skills that can make the difference.
Yeah, no, I totally relate to that. And as somebody whose background, like, I first started out my career working for a non-profit in the UK that helps try to reduce the number of people that ultimately die by suicide, like, that taught me the importance of listening. And it also taught me the importance of actively listening and addressing somebody's functional needs, like as a consultant, maybe, but also addressing their emotional needs as well. Because if they're quite stressed, aggravated, whatever, you need to kind of address those needs first, possibly, before the actual, my code isn't working part of the problem, you know?
Absolutely. Things can escalate very quickly through nobody's fault. You can just end up in a situation where everyone's a little bit at each other's throats. And often it's good to be the calming influence in that role. Let's just all take a breath, take a step back. Can we start from the beginning? Let's just see how we got here. That's really, mediation probably comes into it from time to time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's super important. And that's great. So now you've got an opportunity to kind of demyth or clarify kind of a common misconception that people have or might have about a CTO. Do you think there's like a common myth or like an assumption that people always make when they hear CTO and they say, okay, it's that thing. And as a result, the person is this type of person or does this type of role. Do you think there's anything like that that you kind of like to clarify for audience?
I think historically the role of the CTO was always seen as being some deeply technical person that was almost still writing code, keeping all the plates spinning, keeping all the machines going. But I think that's probably more prevalent outside of the Salesforce ecosystem. I think one of the things we're all fairly familiar with within the Salesforce ecosystem is at every level you need to be able to communicate. It all involves users, it all involves customers, it all involves stakeholders. So that's one of the things we're kind of taught almost from the beginning, regardless of what the role is. You are going to be spending time talking to people, listening to people, understanding their problems, getting feedback on your potential solutions. But I also think it is fair to say that most CTOs that I have come across do still like a gnarly technical problem, and it can't really resist getting hands-on and getting involved. And I'm exactly the same. One of my old colleagues used to say that if he came to me and he asked me, could I fix his bug, I would immediately start asking him what he'd done, why he couldn't solve it himself, what the issue was. Whereas he knew if he just kind of stood near me and started commenting on how weird this was and how unusual and why he couldn't, then at that point in time he'd draw me in and I couldn't help myself to go in and see if there was anything I could help with it. So I think there's probably an element of truth that we've all got a bit of that within us, but I think it's far less technical, I think, than it used to be back in the day.
What is a great way for people to connect with you? Do you have any particular content out there that you'd like to share or other resources?
So the best way to connect with me is on LinkedIn. That's kind of where I spend an awful lot of my time now. That's probably where I spend the majority of my time on social media is on LinkedIn. I do have quite a lot of content out there. There's the Bob Buzzard blog. If you just Google Bob Buzzard blog, Bob Buzzard is my alter ego in the Salesforce ecosystem. It's a screen I've had for about 25, 30 years. Never took off before, whereas now I have to get used to answering to Kira or Bob. So that's where the majority of my content is. I've also got a Substack, the Bob Buzzard stack. I'm very good at name, very clever with names. It's always the Bob Buzzard and then something else. I do have a Medium as well, but I haven't really posted much on that for the last couple of years. I've kind of moved away more onto Substack. Those are probably my key things. And anything interesting that I do, anything on my blog or on my Substack always gets cross-posted to LinkedIn anyway. So LinkedIn is probably the best place to find me and get hold of me.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. And if people are in the area, they can maybe meet you at the London Developer User Group as well, right?
Absolutely. London Salesforce Developers, we meet monthly. I think by the time we get to April, we'll probably be meeting earlier in the month. So the first or second Wednesday, I think, is what we're targeting then. But we have meetups once a month, and I'm typically, I would say, 90% of them. So if people want to come along to any of those, that'd be great. Love to meet people there.
Yeah, and rumour has it you love to speak about things as well.
I do quite like talk. Well, it's a punishment, I always say. And I think I'm going to be talking at the next one because we haven't got enough speakers. So I keep saying, if you lot don't turn up on stage and talk, then you're going to have to listen to me. And eventually, after two or three sessions, they will start finding things they want to talk about rather than listen to me again.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, that's great to know. So thanks again for your time today. And hopefully, when this goes out, we'll inspire some people to be more CTOs. So thanks again.
Thanks, Tom. Great talking to you.
Thanks for tuning in to Be More with Tom Bassett. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave any feedback in the comments